case this morning, Hopgood versus Estrue.
May it please the Court, my name is Kristen Kobayashi and I represent the plaintiff, Ms. Hopgood, on behalf of her minor son, LG. This is a case of child Social Security disability benefits, and similar to adult cases, a child may be found disabled based on whether he or she meets or equals a listing. And unlike adult cases, a child may also be found disabled based on a functional equivalence to the listing evaluated under domains.
What is the recovery, if she is found to be disabled, what sort of benefits accrue to her family or mother?
It would be, depending on what the ALJ finds, it could potentially go back to the date of filing, which I'm sorry, I don't have right in front of me, but I believe it was sometime.
Well, I didn't mean the exact.
2004, yes, I'm in 04.
What type
but the ALJ could also find that if there wasn't enough evidence in 04 to find the child disabled, then at any other point in time thereafter,
would these be monetary payments to the...
That's correct. It's SSI payments, so potentially around, again, depending on the year, around $600 to $637, something like that. It's increased with the COLA each year, but that would be the potential.
That's what I'm talking about. It would be monetary payments to the parent.
That's correct. In a separate account, there are guidelines set up for that, but yes.
LG is now 18, right? By my math. He was
born in 90, so yes, 18. Correct.
So he's 18. But there's still the possibility of recouping
the child benefits,
pay.
Correct. And when the child does turn 18, then he does have to be reevaluated under the adult standards. Mm-hmm. That's correct.
So here's one of my questions for you. A lot of these teacher reports refer to him as having obvious deficiencies, and the administration points out that obvious is the midpoint and suggests that only if you get to serious or very serious do you get the equivalent of the marked or extreme levels that the regulations require. And I want to know why that's such an unreasonable approach for the administrative law judge to take, that we should second guess it.
Sure. I'd like to first point out that would be post hoc rationalization, as the ALJ did not discuss the questionnaires or how, if he didn't discuss them, he obviously didn't analyze them and determine how to weight what the obvious or severe impairments would have been. And beside that, there's no regulation or ruling that says there's such parallelism between the definitions of marked and extreme and then the definitions of obvious, serious, and very serious within the teacher questionnaire. Even if that were the case, Mr. Ekman's report found a very serious problem area under interacting and relating with others. So potentially that could be characterized as an extreme impairment. Ms. Johnson and Ms. Matthews found serious and obvious problem areas. So potentially those serious areas could have been found to be a marked impairment. But in general, the parallelism just doesn't make that much sense. In each of the domains, there are 10 to 13 categories. So is a marked impairment one where you have to meet all 10 categories, or is it if you have a combination of 3 obvious problems and 5 serious problems that gets you to a marked? There's no guideline. The ALJ needed to do an analysis with respect to that. Then there's also the frequency of the behaviors, and there's no way to take that into consideration. So if an obvious behavior was happening on an hourly basis, but a very serious behavior is only happening monthly, then how do you compare which is worse? And so the ALJ, again, had to make that analysis, and no, I don't think there's any way you can directly compare, again, the definitions of marked and extreme with the definitions of obvious, serious, and very serious.
Now, which of these, you're really focusing on 3 of the domains.
That's correct.
And I found the ALJ's discussion of the acquiring and using information domain to be plausible, I mean, I don't know, at least let's assume for the moment that is, attending and completing tasks and interacting related to others worry me much more. I mean, I'm not sure what, how one divides up the evidence, but to what extent does the ALJ talk about what appear to be an increasing number of suspensions from school and inability to handle the school environment?
Well, the ALJ left out a lot of information about the suspensions and concluded that the medications in some way were alleviating the behavior. But I think the suspensions were noted consistently since 2004. There were suspensions 2004, 2005, a kind of a congregation of them in 2006 for a few months, but it still was consistent over the years. So that part of the ALJ's decision doesn't make any sense. The ALJ doesn't connect a logical bridge between the evidence there and his conclusion that somehow his behavior was improved.
This is sort of a general question. I mean, I understand the purpose of this act is to mainstream these children in regular schools, but does it come to a point where that just is impossible because of the condition?
Oh, I think it's definitely not possible for every child. I think the goal of the special education programs in the school is to try to include as many kids as possible with as much assistance as they need. And perhaps, I don't know the percentage of when they're able to fully include them again, but certainly not all children can be.
But there is a program then for those outside of the mainstream.
That is true. That I think that they have certain either specific behavioral disorder schools, but again, I'm not entirely sure. And Judge, you had mentioned that you felt that the acquiring and using domain that ALJ did it.
Yeah, what's your evidence that, I mean, I know that we have to be a little artificial to separate out, you know, which is the real problem, but I wasn't sure what was, aside from the fact that he's categorized as somewhat learning disabled or lower on the intelligence.
Well, I think in that domain, the ALJ relies heavily on a supposed academic progress and improvement in LG's grades. I would really question the perspective that the ALJ took when he made that statement. Before being placed into special education, LG was failing all of his classes. And then once placed in special education through the IEP accommodations, then his grades did improve. But if you look at the standard test scores that he was given, in sixth grade, he was testing out around the fourth grade level. I think one subject was maybe the late third grade level and the rest fourth grade. Then you look again in eighth grade, and he's still testing out around the mid-fourth grade level with one subject, I believe, early fifth grade level. So he's now progressed two grades in school, but that his actual functional ability has not really progressed. So I would question very much the ALJ's assertion that there was academic progress, and even if the grades improve somewhat, what that really means in perspective of the...
Does the record show the grades for a student in an IEP correlated to how well the student achieves the goals that the IEP sets out?
That's right.
So they're not sort of objective grades, how well do you write? Or
the grades state that it's IEP progress. And then also there was a note in one of the IEPs that there's the state standards, they called them CABs, and that he was not to be evaluated strictly based on the state standards. So, yes, he had accommodations as well in the grades.
I'm sorry. The ALJ described the school absences and his failure to complete homework. And are these the volitional choices the ALJ referred to when he found LG had a less than marked limitation in attending and completing tasks? And I want to know specifically, too, what the doctor said about his control over this kind of behavior.
Okay. Yes, that is what the ALJ was talking about in that domain, that somehow LG had the ability to change his behavior, and I would argue that that's an independent medical judgment based on the part of the ALJ, because his psychiatrists were prescribing Risperdal, Ritalin, and Adderall, which would suggest that they felt he could not adequately control his behavior. His doctors also noted ADHD, hyperactivity, inattentiveness, impulsiveness, problems focusing and concentrating, all of which the ALJ failed to address. And the ALJ actually mischaracterized Dr. Shim, who was one of the psychiatrists there, by stating he never noted there was impulsive behavior, but Dr. Shim did note that, among other things. I see that. I only have 1 minute. I'll save that for rebuttal, if that's okay.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Jim Guerin. I represent the Commissioner in this matter. The ALJ did not ignore evidence. He, in fact, discussed in some detail a lot of the evidence that favored LG's case. For example, the ALJ recognized ADHD problems such as following. He had problems following simple directions. He had problems doing his classwork and his homework, problems staying focused, temper tantrums, discipline issues. He had problems beginning and completing assignments. He needed additional explanation and examples. He argued with his sister. He left the classroom. He wandered the halls. The ALJ mentioned all of these things.
The ALJ mentions a lot of things, but what I'm disturbed by, this is only a six-page opinion, and the last page doesn't count for much. It just summarizes the findings. Is the amount of evidence pointing in the other direction that the ALJ doesn't really grapple with, whether it's the severe problems that some of his teachers noted, even the way you're supposed to correlate the teacher findings with the administrative standards, the physicians that are doing this, the fact that the grades are, in fact, IEP correlated. You know, the grades for some children are to be able to sit still for an hour. You know, that it's completely personal to the child. It's not the same as you or me getting an A in a class. So I'm just very disturbed that the ALJ is taking a very sunny look at this picture and not really grappling with the bad parts.
I would respectfully disagree that the ALJ is taking a sunny view. I think that the fact that LG is not disabled does not mean that he doesn't have significant limitations.
Well, the question is he? I mean, it seems to me on this record anyway, the question is he markedly impaired in two domains? I would take, for the sake of argument, that no showing of extreme impairment in one domain has been shown. But the two that I'm focusing on, as I told Ms. Kobayashi, are attending and completing tasks, which it seems to me they're just, there's no evidence that he can do that, and interacting and relating to others with the school record that, you know, he's being suspended every 15 minutes for something. So it seems surprising to me that we don't see a more thorough discussion of those two.
I think that one of the interesting things about this case, unlike some other child SSI cases, is that we have actually affirmative evidence that doctors and teachers considered his limitations to be moderate. In fact, the doctors themselves, with the exception of Dr. Shim's initial evaluation, all of the other doctors who offered an opinion on his limitations found that he was had moderate limitations. I'm referring, of course, to Dr. Mandley, the reviewing doctor, who found less than marked limitations. Dr. Polzinski, the psychologist who did a consultative examination, found that he had a GAF score of 55, which is interpreted as moderate. And even his own treating psychologist, Dr. Wells, found that he had a GAF score of 55. That's correlated also with the teachers.
So I'm looking for the ALJ's opinion saying that. He mentions all these doctors in the acquiring and using information domain, but then when he gets down to attending and completing classes, we don't see what you're saying. See, many of these notes from his teachers describe a lack of interest and failure to participate, but then he doesn't cope with the question Judge Williams asked, to what extent all of this is the result of volitional choices.
I think it's reasonable to assume that even a child with ADHD still has volition.
Well,
and
but we need evidence. Mm-hmm. We need a discussion of why does this child, some children, I'm sure that's right, ADHD isn't a light switch where you either have it or not. There are a whole spectrum of...
Well, one example, I think, Your Honor, would be the fact that Ms. Hopgood herself testified that LG sometimes forgot to do his chores, but sometimes he just didn't want to. And
that's an unfair characterization of his mother's testimony taken as a whole, it seems to mm-hmm. me. She's been working very hard to help him cope.
And I think that's also true. And the ALJ did, it should be noted, the ALJ did not dismiss LG's limitations as merely volitional. The ALJ, again, found very significant limitations.
Well, what he says is on attending and completing tasks, while claimant does have a diagnosis of ADHD, his limitations in these domains are also related to his absences from school, failure to complete homework, volitional choices on the part of claimant, as well as lack of parental supervision and involvement. Where does that come from in the record?
As far as the lack of parental supervision, I'm not entirely sure. I think there probably is evidence in the record from which I could make an argument that reflects that.
Well, but we need to deal with what the ALJ said.
Yeah,
right?
The ALJ did not explain that point.
I'm very concerned, and Judge Wood is right. That line she read, that paragraph, was a paragraph I was concerned about, because it's basically saying, you know, he's absent from school, he doesn't complete homework, and those were volitional choices. When you look at everything that the doctors say, they talk about all of his problems with concentration, with focus, the medications that he's on, how sometimes he doesn't take the medications. And there's no discussion in that context in this attending and completing task.
Well, I would point out also in respect to this, the teachers who actually commented on this, and incidentally, we would like to object to the notion that this is post hoc argument. It was LG who raised these teachers' questionnaires in the first place. If you look at those questionnaires, we have questionnaires from four teachers.
Right. So Mrs. Johnson, the eighth grade teacher, says he had obvious problems in 6 out of 10 and difficulty in 9 out of 10. Obvious problems in 8 areas, obvious problems in 5 areas. Matthews says he has obvious problems in 10 areas and serious problem in paying attention. You do have a mixed bag from the teachers.
I agree, Your Honor, and I think if you take a look at those limitations for each of the domains where we have they range from 13 to, I guess, 10 subcategories. With all of them, they're almost all on the less severe side of the ledger. I think if we turn the tables here, and if we had teachers' reports that had all marked or serious or very serious with just a couple on the obvious or mild, I think that I would be on very shaky ground arguing that that represented non-marked limitations. However, I think that these records themselves, if you look at them, if you stand back, the first one in September 2004 found only slight problems in attending and completing tasks out of the 13, and only one was obvious. And that teacher, incidentally, also found no problem with interacting and relating to others.
In that domain, there does seem to be a difference. He seems to interact well with his friends, who apparently are not particularly well chosen, but to interact very poorly with adults and adult supervision and his teachers. does the ALJ ever explain how we're supposed to reconcile those two things?
Well, just looking at what the teachers actually reported on these forms, only one teacher ever veered in the interacting and relating to others into the area of serious.
Yeah, but he's suspended from school. I mean, it's clear he has problems with adult authority, unless you think the school authorities are just randomly suspending him, which doesn't seem reasonable.
Again, I agree with you, Your Honor. He does have problems. And
so he plays well with his friends when he wants to, but he doesn't respond at all well to adult authority.
Plus, we got the issue of the mothers AJ says that she was generally credible, but didn't really explain why her testimony did not constitute disability.
Well, the fact that she was generally credible, I don't think that her testimony actually,
He didn't break it down and explain why there were problems. He finds she was generally credible, but he doesn't really take apart why he can't believe her on certain behavior.
I believe that he was saying that he didn't disbelieve her on most of the points that she was making. If there are no further questions, we ask the court to consider the fact that the ALJ did consider all of the evidence. He discussed all of the records, and we ask you to affirm the commissioner's decision. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. How much time? You have 1 minute.
With respect to Judge Williams' last point regarding Ms. Hopgood's credibility, the ALJ did find her generally credible. The ALJ failed to mention numerous portions of her testimony, which would have suggested that ALJ was at least markedly limited in two, if not three, domains. And I do list that in my brief, all of the things in which she testified to. There was also the one report that you had just mentioned from Mr. Ekman noting only slight problems, if any. That was taken in September of 2004, the beginning of the school year. 1 month later, toward the end of October, Mr. Ekman gave another report, and he's the one that found the very serious problem in interacting and relating with others. So I would imagine he got to know LG better, and that was his revised opinion. With respect to the state agency opinion, the commissioner did not raise that in his brief, and I would argue that that's waived. Further, the ALJ did not adopt that opinion, and the opinion itself was different from what the ALJ found. I see that my time is up. Thank you.
This is a pro bono case for you, is it?
Pardon?
Pro bono case for you? Well, you don't have to answer that question.
I'm not quite sure how that. I don't do that part.
And thanks to both counsel. Case will be taken under advisement. Court will be in recess until tomorrow.